Hey there, Danny with Right Foot Down. I messed up this ad read so many times because I really wanted to tell you about Track Monkey Apparel. They make great quality, enthusiast shirts along with hats, stickers, watches, patches, you name it. A couple of my personal favorites are their Life is Better at the Track tee and their One Track Mind tee. You should really check them out and see for yourself. Their products are great for you or the gearhead in your life. Visit trackmonkeyapparel.com.
You're listening to the Untitled Car Show in partnership with RightFootDown.com. Visit RightFootDown for your daily automotive fix. If you enjoyed today's program, please tell a friend. It's the best way to support this show. If you want to visit the archives, go to YouTube and search for Untitled Car Show. That'll bring you to the archived episodes. If you want to follow the show, just search for Untitled Car Show on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can always send an email to the show at untitledcarshow@rightfootdown.com. We're so glad you decided to spend the next hour or so with us. Without further ado, let's get into today's program.
Hello and welcome to Untitled Car Show. Before we get into it much this evening, near the end of the episode, we ended up having a little bit of some technical difficulties with just I don't know what, because if I knew what it was, then we'd be able to fix it. But be aware that you're not missing anything. There's a segment that kind of cuts out abruptly near the end. And I did my best to, as you can kind of hear now, my voice is kind of crap, but there was some coughing and wheezing, so I did my best to cut that out. So other than that, pretty much Patrick George, always a delight to have on the show. He's the editor in chief over at Jalopnik. You know, great guys over there. Really always have to give them credit. You know, seeing what they did, I'm not sure if this came up in the episode, but seeing kind of the community and the acceptance around, you know, car culture and all the different various aspects of it was really a big inspiration for doing what I get to do here, which is, you know, talk to all sorts of crazy fun people. And, of course, without Opposite Lock, I definitely would not be where I'm at. And that was a, you know, part of Jalopnik back in the day. And now it's still part, I guess, kind of, but not really. So, you know, it's always great to, you know, be able to talk to Patrick George. I'm always happy to be able to bring him on the show, and I hope every time we bring a guest back on, you all really appreciate it and enjoy it, and if there's ever anyone you hear on the show that you want me to bring back, just let me know. So without further ado, let's get into today's episode. So hello and welcome to the Untitled Car Show. Today we have Patrick George. He is the editor-in-chief over with a little publication called Jalopnik. He's been on the program a few times before. I believe this is his third appearance, and it's always a pleasure to have you.
It is.
Patrick, thank you so much for joining me. I apologize a little bit to the listeners for my voice. It's kind of crap, but just allergies and cold and dehumidifiers all play a wonderful role. So damn it, I knew I would cough.
You good?
I'm
you
good.
You sound fine. You sound breathy like a 40s movie star. It's lovely.
Well, I apologize for that. So I hope the listeners haven't tuned out by now. So it's been a whirlwind year over there at Jalopnik, and I'm just curious how you're handling all your newfound television fame.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. It's always lovely to chat with you. It's always nice to come back on the Untitled Car Show podcast, although I'm still sad you still don't have a title for it. You'll get there. I have faith in you, man.
I'm expected to be bought out by someone. We went over this, and, you know, I was waiting for Jalopnik to have its own podcast, but I'm not jealous at all. It's fine.
We keep spending our money on David's Jeeps, unfortunately. So it just kills any ventures we'd like to have outside of that. Okay. You know, You mentioned, you said, how are we adjusting to TV fame? I'm not sure I'd call it fame at all, really. We had a lot of fun doing Car vs. America. It looks like it's coming back for a second season, but that's not confirmed yet. We're sort of talking to them about it now. Did you get a chance to watch any of the show? Do you have Fusion Network and get a chance to see the episodes?
I do have Fusion Network. I have like the world's worst package on Fios, but for whatever reason, like I get like no like major channels, but they're like, here's Fusion Network. I'm like, all right, Cars versus America. I really enjoyed the whole show. I think my one complaint.
Thank you.
My one complaint for the show is it needs to be an hour long. A half hour is just not doing it justice. You need to be able to breathe.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Like, the first episode we did, and I'll preface by saying that, like, while we had done a ton of digital video over the years, this is the first time any of us, me, Mike, and Raph, had ever done a TV show before. It was the first time that anyone at the Gizmodo Media Group had ever done a TV show. So it was a new experience for all of us. And when they shot the first episode, they wondered if they should switch to an hour format, but I think for a litany of reasons beyond my control, they decided to just do half an hour. But I appreciate you saying that. And there's a lot of stuff, especially like the first couple episodes that were left on the cutting room floor, that we're trying to get copies of the footage for, and we can turn into videos on the website. Like, for example, like in one episode, the first episode, like Jason Torchinski and Mike and Raph also go down to Gary Duncan, who's that car dealer in Virginia who has all the warehouse full of K cars and insane Japanese imported cars and Nissan Palos and stuff, and they drove around in like fire trucks and Japanese hearse vehicles and stuff like that. It's like that's like, you know, TV gold. So I'm trying to get copies of that for the site. You can expect that soon if we're successful. But yeah, I don't know. I'd love to do an hour episode. In some ways it means you shoot twice as much and have to edit twice as much and have to sell twice as much to advertisers and everything else like that. But, you know, some of that stuff's not up to me, but thanks for saying nice things about it.
Well, I really, cause it's the first time I think, you know, new media has kind of done a transition back to old media, at least in the, automotive sector, because now you see like programs like Roadkill and stuff like that showing up on like Velocity Network, and you guys kind of beat them all to that punch, which I think is, maybe Mighty Car Mods, but they're Australian, and that's Australian TV, so that doesn't really count. So, because that's all backwards
anyway.
I
don't know about the timing on Roadkill, for sure. We might have beaten them. I don't know. If it's a traditional TV, Drive on NBC Sports was really the first one. Like, if they started as the web property and the YouTube channel Drive, and then they got their NBC Sports deal, and they're in their, I want to say, fourth season now. So, like, they beat us by a couple of years. But, like, yeah, it is interesting how that works. It was a real eye-opener doing TV, just, like, learning how, not just how it's shot and done, which isn't, like, shot and edited is not that much different from, you know, a digital video, like a long form half hour digital video, but like the way that distribution works, the way that these things make money, the way they sell them to, you know, the way that you know, networks like Fusion make their money. That was all very, very interesting to see. So it was kind of cool to be a part of that.
Yeah. And we're a little limited on time here. So I'm kind of curious too, we touched it briefly, but you're moving into another sphere. You're moving into the podcast realm with a podcast coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on with all that?
Yeah, for sure. It's our first podcast ever. It launches this month. It's called Tempest. And we left the actual launch date a little vague until we knew we had our shit together for it. So it could very well be like March 29th. But I think middle of the month is probably when it's going to hit. And we'll be hyping up the actual date when we learn it. Anyway, Tempest is, if you read Jalopnik at all last year, you probably read some of the essays by David Obachowski. He's a long-form feature writer who's written for Deadspin and Gawker and The All and other places, and he did stories about the man who was addicted to buying BMWs and went to prison for it, or the guy in the neighborhood in Brooklyn where I live who lost his beloved Dodge Charger to a hurricane and didn't get it back and has dealt with other challenges in his life. Anyway, he's done these long stories about, you know, people and their relationship with cars. sometimes they're very fraught, very complicated and difficult relationships. But it goes beyond the usual stuff that you see. And I think most automotive media, which is just tends to be centered around just, you know, reviewing the latest car and doing very dry news. And, you know, David actually came up with this podcast idea. He was like, yeah, I'd like to take some of these stories I do about people and turn it into like audio storytelling. And he's a musician. He had a bunch of recording equipment. And we decided to green light it. And we've been, myself and Kristen Lee and Mandana Mofidi, who's Fusion's director of audio, have been working with him to kind of craft these stories that he's been doing about cars and about the people who own them into a 7-series podcast that we're going to have on Jalopnik. And it's the best way I can describe it is This American Life, but with cars. So it's going to be, you know, funny and sad and tear-jerkery and rage-inducing, but he's found some interesting people and is doing some cool profiles on them. Like the first episode is about this guy Walt. Walt worked his whole life and, you know, took care of his kids, did everything he could. His end goal, he just wanted a 55 Chevy Bel Air. That was just what he wanted. And, you know, it's kind of a stereotypical boomer car, but, you know, it was a man's dream car. You know, he wanted it, so, like, but then he unfortunately passed away before he ever got to enjoy it. And it was kind of a story about – the story is about Walt and his family. And he talks to his kids and his wife and just about his life and how he kind of got so close to the dream. This thing never got there, you know. So that's kind of the stuff we're going for. And like I said, it's a little different than I think you see in most automotive storytelling. So we're hoping that we're able to do something like new and different than no one else has done before with Tempest.
Mm-hmm. No, it's – again, part of what I really like about Jalopnik as a whole, is there a bomb about to go off in the background?
Oh, that's just my wife making dinner. I do the dishes. I'm responsible for the dishes later. I want to be, oh, you're fine. No, you're fine. You're doing great. Also, my dog barks a lot. So.
Oh, that's fine. No, it was just like, beep, 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 beep. Like, we're setting off the bomb now. It's like, what's going on over there? But, no, what I really like about Jalopnik as a entity, I think, is, and then
oh, anyway.
So what I really like about Jalopnik is kind of like the entity that it is, especially underneath your stewardship. You know, in the last couple of years, is it has been more offbeat, I guess is the good way to put it. Like, it's been tackling different, like the same issues maybe that someone else might tackle, but from a completely different angle. And that's what I kind of liked about Cars versus America. Like, it was accessible enough. My wife, who could give less than a rat's ass about cars, really enjoyed it. And then I, you know, obviously liked the guys on the show, and I was enjoying it. And then, you know, This American Life meets Cars is a great, like, kind of it's almost like the barn find Hunter or whatever.
Mm.
Yeah, I forget his name, and I had him on the show, that's sad. But, like, in terms of people, and it's kind of, you know, like, I don't think Motor Trend would have, like, a column like Fancy Kristen, for example. So it's kind of like, you know, I like the kind of the offbeatness and kind of what's been going on. And I think last year was a very good year for the site in terms of articles and what was going on with the TV, and now there's podcasts coming out, and it's very exciting to kind of see it start to spread out and kind of get more into the zeitgeist of car culture. Because is it still the number one online news source for cars?
As far as I know, yeah. I don't think anyone can match our numbers these days, which I'm extremely proud of. And, like, I started here in 2012 when we were a hell of a lot smaller, and, like, a good month for us was when we hit maybe, like, 1 million readers, and now we're up to about 10 in the U.S. alone. That's pretty insane. It's something that I'm really proud of, and I take very seriously to cultivate and take care of that audience and give them a good product that, like, no one else is giving. And I appreciate you saying, like, you know, it's a little different from, like, the Motor Trends of the world. Like, no disrespect to those guys, but, like, I do want us to be, like, a different product that you get from the vast majority of car coverage, which is just centered around, you know, new car reviews. And we do plenty of those too, but, like, it's just that with no context, no storytelling, no history, no economics, you know. I think there's a lot more, and no stories about people. Like, there's so much more in the world of cars, the world of transportation, we want to be covering no one else is doing. And that's kind of been always been my goal. And I think we've really delivered on that and are trying to keep it up.
Yeah. Well, like speaking of like the intersection of cars and people, one of my favorite stories from last year that y'all put out was about the poor guy in Delaware who was disabled, who built the shop and like the pain in the ass neighbors. I know that's kind of been a multi-year thing.
Oh, yeah. That poor guy.
Yeah. Delaware homeowners associations. They're wonderful.
They are. It's just, yeah, that was a tragic one, but he prevailed in the end.
Like, I know.
He had the worst neighbors ever. And everyone was like, hell yeah, man. No, he came through. Like, this is a disabled guy. I think he was, if I want to say he was a disabled veteran, it's like, yeah. Let the man live. Let him work on his damn cars in the driveway, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I don't think you'd see that coverage from a Motor Trend or a Road and Track. Again, nothing against those guys, but that's not their readership. The readership is like, I like stats, and I know these guys, and I see them out and about, and I've had people from those magazines on, and it's like, I don't think dry facts and stuff like that really makes sense in this day and age. And again, to, you know, I probably started reading Jalopnik, I think right around the time you got in charge over there around 2012, right before I was like, well, if these jerks online can write stuff and be popular, why can't I talk into a microphone and be popular? That seems like it makes sense. So, I don't know. I could sit here and compliment you all day. I think that's pretty much been the, you know, maybe that's why you enjoy coming on so much. I think it's just good for your ego for about like,
it feeds my ego. Yeah. No one else is really nice to me in the course of my day, except for you. So I appreciate being here. No, it's sweet of you to say that. And like I said, I think it's just, you're doing the same thing with your podcast, like create a unique product, do it a lot, do it well. And like, hopefully that's the best way I've found to build an audience. I think part of it also speaks to just like, when you look at the way cars are going in general, it's like there's not – everything is crazy fast. Everything is electronic. Everything is increasingly autonomous. The future, it might be driverless, whether that's the immediate future or the distant future remains to be seen. There are very few truly bad cars for sale anymore besides those made by Mitsubishi. So it's kind of like – What kind of stories are you going to get from like the world of new car sales? And it's like there's not a whole lot. Like everything is really good, but it's not as interesting as it used to be. So it's like I like to look elsewhere for stories, like stories about people and cultures and weird things that people do in cars. Like I really liked David Tracy's story today, where he went to Sweden's Speed Week, and it was just all these like crazy hoons in Sweden turning old Volvos into snowplows and just like breaking axles and diffs and going nuts and like swapping Beamer motors and old Supras and just going nuts on the ice. It was just like, it looks like heaven, like a very, very cold heaven, but it's like, this is the, one of the coolest, craziest things I've ever seen. Speed Week on an ice is what it was called, which is just wild. And like, yeah, I mean, like I want to do more stories about like the stuff that people actually do, that to me is infinitely more interesting than whether the new 3 Series is better than the new C-Class.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when you think about this, you're throwing this out 50, 100 years, we are going to get to a point where cars are going to be basically, I mean, they're all pretty close to similar now in categories and classes, but there's going to be a point where this is the most efficient engine or motor or electricity. It all sits on this platform. This is how it's built. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's all going to be pretty much the same. And car culture is going to need to survive by, you know, embracing the crazy. And, you know, eventually I do think it's going to get to a point where, you know, self-driving cars are the norm. The people who want to drive their cars mm-hmm. are crazy. And we're going to be the people, I think, who are Jalopnik people now are who dressage people were, you know, 50, 100 years ago, where it's like, well, a horse is no longer a thing. These people really like horses, and for some reason, they think they can make them dance. So that's what they do now, is they just have horse dancing. Like,
yeah.
And I
you're right. Yeah, it's like drifting is like the modern day equivalent of horse dancing. Only it's like guys and girls like you and me, and not like rich assholes doing it, you know?
Exactly. Like, man, horses are expensive. And I hate horses.
Yeah, you know.
Just as an aside, I hate horses. Just as an aside.
Big, they smell.
They're awful. Big, dumb, buck tooth. But whatever. I will go off on horses for an hour. Maybe that's what I'll do once this is over to fill some more time. But I think we talked about this a little bit last time, but like, do you see that impending like point 10 years from now, 20 years from now? When do you think self-driving cars are going to be more of the norm than more of rare?
It took me a long time to figure out how like a car enthusiast site should be covering self-driving cars. And eventually I landed on the idea that we shouldn't be anti this idea, this concept, but we should be very skeptical of it. And I've learned to become very skeptical of the claims that are made by, the Silicon Valley tech thinkfluencers about autonomous cars when they say that cars are going to be fully driverless in 5-10 years. We don't have any fully self-driving cars right now. Mm-hmm. Even the prototypes that are on the road, from Google and Chevy or whatever, are barely that. They don't work in the snow. They don't work in bad rain. They make a lot of mistakes. They're not there now. The stuff that we have on the road, Tesla's Autopilot, Cadillac Super Cruise, it's glorified cruise control. It's like really good cruise control that you also have to mind at all times and doesn't always do what it's supposed to and is also kind of scary. I don't see that shifting to full 100% level 5 of autonomy in 5 years. I think that's more like 50 years.
Yeah.
The other big factor is, can you get drivers to buy this stuff? Can you get buyers to want to adopt it? And study after study after study says that, like, people are not especially interested in self-driving cars. I think that, like, the current generation of, like children, like little kids now, people who aren't even old enough to drive, like, they're the ones who are going to be your fully self-driving car adopters. But, like, I've been in these cars. I've been in the prototypes. I've been in the cars with autopilot and other systems, and they freak me out. And, like, I'd like to think I know more about how cars work than your average person. And there's a lot that can go wrong. As a person who, like, I have no interest personally in the technology as an owner. Like, I would never use these systems. I have to remind myself to do that on the cars I test. So imagine your average user who's probably not a very good driver to begin with, and you're putting a lot of trust in their hands to, like, want to pay more and use the system properly. Like, that's a longer shift than we think it is. So I'm kind of skeptical this is all going to happen on the time frame that it is. And I thought that last year, Brian Felton did one of my favorite stories that we've done to date on self-driving cars, and didn't do like insane numbers for us. He pointed out, he was like, self-driving cars aren't about saving lives. Like, not really. Like, it's not about safety. It's not about preventing accidents. It's just another revenue stream for the car company. Like, let's look at this in like a cynical capitalistic way. It's a way for them, like, oh, well, they're all make on this race to add more features as they've been doing since cars were invented. And this is just the next feature to be added. So, then that hinges on, are buyers going to want these features? I'm not convinced that they are right now. No. A long, really long-winded rambling answer for that. I apologize, but that's how I feel.
Oh, that's why we like the long form, because we can ramble when we want to. I think you bring up an interesting point, and kind of talking about the youngins too. I'm curious if you've seen this in your own kind of life in the automotive world. My interaction with the people of the generation behind me has been the enthusiasts are more like the car enthusiasts seem to be more women than men coming up. And I don't know why that is, but like there's a lot of little girls who are like my little girl too, in which I'm sure there's some influence there. She's 3. She already loves cars. She has her matchboxes and everything. And, I have nieces and nephews, and all the nephews are sitting at home playing video games, and all of my nieces are, like, ecstatic to learn how to drive and get out of the house. And it seems weird to me, like, that I wonder if there's going to be that paradigm shift, sooner rather than later, and what that's going to do to the, like, kind of enthusiasts as a whole. Like, can you imagine 10 years from now going to a car meet and it being – maybe not 10, but 15 years from now, going to a car meet and having to be more women there than men, like women dragging boyfriends.
I think it's a good thing. I think that like, I've always believed speed is for everyone. I'm very proud of the fact that like almost half of our staff is female these days, which is more than I think any other publication in our field. this the car enthusiasm, it's for everybody. It shouldn't just be for the guy. It's like for the car guys. Like, you know, everybody, whether they're, you know, they're into racing or not, or cars, or they're, everybody has a story about a car. Everybody has, is engaged in some way, I think. And it's really awesome to see more women get involved, and especially to be like an example to younger women. Chris did a profile of one of our racing drivers, that we wrote about last year. And then she said that, she's a young woman herself. She's like 19 or 20, races in the sports car series. And she said in the interview, you know, young girls have come up to me at races and said, I didn't know that girls were allowed to participate. And then she's like, holy shit. Like, of course you are. Like, and that was just like mind blowing for them. So it's amazing to see that this, it's good and healthy for the hobby, because it just means it appeals to more people, and it brings in a more diverse group of like skills and talents and preferences and experiences when you get everybody involved. So I'm thrilled to see that happening.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious on that note. So, another podcast, Team Clearcoat guys, I always give them a shout out because this is a brilliant idea of theirs, but they claim, you know, we need to learn to be donk friendly as a community. Like, we need to not yuck another person's yum. Like, do you think there's a way to kind of teach a guy who likes his stance cars to appreciate a, you know, donked out car or a four wheeler or something like that? Or do you think this is always going to kind of be a inter-segregated community type deal?
I think attitudes are changing just from what I see in the comments. And I think more and more people are like, well, you know, donking's not something I'd ever do to my car, but if that's how you express your enthusiasm, then good for you. Like, we're all in it together. The future is just going to be the robots taking our keys away. So if that's how you choose to enjoy this hobby, then more power to you. I don't think there's, regardless of what community you're in, I don't think there's a car enthusiast alive who wouldn't, like, at the drop of a hat, like, go help somebody else wrench on the side of the road, or go help them fix stuff up. Like, that's who we are. That's what we do. Yeah. So I think that you are seeing fewer divisions, or at least people saying, you know, like, yeah, it's not going to be my cup of tea, but like, I appreciate what you do. And that's kind of one of the things that I want to do with our coverage too, is like, show different car culture, show the stories, car culture, show the passions that these people have. And then maybe we can all understand each other a little bit better. I'm consistently amazed that there is no media outlet really serving like low riders or donks or Decatur or the really out there car cultures, or like a Bosuzoku in America. Like, it's all, again, you go back to like corporate car media. It's just, you know, new Malibu versus new Ford Fusion. That's all it fucking is. And it's like, there is so much more out there that we could be doing, and so many more stories of people we could be telling and understanding our world a little bit better.
Yeah. It is remarkable to me how, like, again, like, every now and again you'll see like Lowrider Life like pop up on like some like random, it's just such a big market space that's just not, I don't get it. Like, I would think that you would chase the money, but some people, I guess, just, I don't know, maybe it's off the radar, they don't know about it. So I kind of want to pitch you some terrible TV ideas using your staff.
Yes. Yes, please. Please pitch me bad TV ideas. I'm a TV executive now. I was executive producer on the car show. So I drive around in a drop top Porsche. I do cocaine all day. You know, and I'm terrible to people. So yes, pitch away.
I think you need scarves too. Yep. How many scarves do you currently own?
Not nearly enough. Talk to Alex Roy. He's the summer scarf expert, and I can't beat his taste. So,
my first idea is this: I got the show name, and then I got the actual idea. So this one is crazy car ladies, and this one is going to be Steph and Alanis drive around in old cars and rescue cats.
That's good. I think there's a market for that. Anytime you get cats involved. I don't know if Steph's a cat person. She may not like animals, but Atlantis does. It's like that's like the buddy cop aspect of it. It's like one of them likes cats, and the other one is ambivalent about cats, or only likes stuffed animals. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That is true. There is the stuffed animal love there. As long as there's queso involved, I'm sure she can be persuaded.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's usually how it works.
All right. This next one's a game show, so you get like three contestants. You can host it, or you can get one of your lackeys to host it. And it's called Bet on Bozzy. And what it is we give Bozzy a car part, and contestants guess about how long he can talk about each particular part.
And I have to pick the contestants, or is that just the idea?
No, it's just a game show. So contestants, you know, they try and come on, they put their name in a raffle and they...
Genius. I've told him before, he's like that guy on like every superhero show who's like the one behind the computer on the superheroes, like earpiece, who's like, you know, like hacking the building and getting schematics for it and shit, like the shit that like nobody can do. You know, he came out today and I think uncovered the fact, for Road and Track, that the next Miata is going to get a 31 horsepower bump from NHTSA filing, which is pretty impressive. So, yeah. You know, that guy's magical. He has all kinds of crazy skills.
He is magical. This next one is called Hoarders, but for cars. And the idea is it's hoarders.
I think I know where this is going.
But for cars. And I think we should go start with one of your staffers first. A Mr. David Tracy seems to have a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. No, well, as you may recall, there was a reality show called Intervention for a while. I don't believe it's still on, but like, we've considered staging one for David. I know, there are, or at least sending our cleaning columnist Jolie Kerr to his house and being like, no, you can't keep a transfer case in your kitchen sink. Like, we are going to fix this. So he'd be a good contender for Hoarders or for Intervention.
Yes.
Or Intervention for Hoarders.
Yeah. Like, first the Intervention, like, no, you can't use oil to color all your clothes. That's not how this works. So this one is, I'll give you the premise first and then we'll get to the title. So this one is, you have Fancy Kristen, which is obviously a little fictitious. So what we do is we actually fund her crazy adventures and we call it Fancy Kristen Bankrupts Manhattan.
That's good. I think she could do it in like 12 hours, you know, just turn over the budget of the city of New York to her and let her do it.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Fancy Kristen Bankrupts Manhattan. I'm going to pitch that to Fusion. You can be executive producer on it. You'll be great.
Excellent. Yeah, that's just what I need. All right, this last one's a little bit of a tired idea, but it's called Balavan in a Van. And what it is we make him live in a car. So we'll start off with like an RV. And then,
yes, done. I don't need to hear anymore. Just make him live in a car. That's fine.
Yeah.
Just do it.
But each episode, we make him live it in like a month, and then each episode we just make it slightly smaller. So like, you know, start with an RV and with a K car. Yeah. Just keep going out like that.
Yeah. Like every episode. And just, it'd be fun if you like drugged him and don't tell him. Like, we're like gaslighting Balavan. Oh no, Balavan, you've always been in a Subaru Sam car.
This last one is my favorite idea.
I wasn't that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's endless hours of entertainment, especially good if you lock him in each one. So you tranquilize him, knock him out, put him in the RV. Like, oh, this isn't so bad. And then by the end, he's in a K car and he's been stuck in there. So this last one is a personal favorite of mine, which is it's called Poor Kamsky. And we just literally strap a camera to Torchinsky at all times. Just live feed it 24/7.
That's good.
I know you got to run. Anything you want to say before we get out for the evening?
No, I don't know if you got this or not. I just want to say thank you so much for having me on. It's really great to talk to you as always. If any of your listeners are readers of Jalopnik, thank you very much for reading. And tune into Car vs. America if you can. And our new podcast, Tempest, which launches in March. It was great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, no, thank you. And remember, I can be bought cheap. I'm just saying, if you need another podcast, I'm very cheap. I'm like a couple of Twix, and that's pretty much it. All right.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. I'm sorry the connection got bad. I don't know what happened, but I really appreciate you talking to me.
Oh, no problem. Yep, I'm going to go ahead and say goodbye to you off air. Nope.
You there?
I'm here. All right, Patrick, I'm going to let you go. Thanks
all right,
again.
I'll let you
have a good one. Bye-bye. So, everyone, thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If you like what you hear and you want to help spread the word, you know, just tell a friend, tell someone, you know, anyone at the car community. You just go out, find them, and say, hey, listen to the Untitled Car Show. Don't explain anything beyond that, though, because that's all they need to know. No, just let them, put them to a link. Leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, wherever you're listening to this. So thanks, everyone, so much for listening. So, you know, I really do appreciate it. We've been going strong now for however many episodes. It's been crazy. And every week doing it is because I see those numbers going up and I see everyone listening, you know, sharing it and telling a friend. So thanks, everyone, for doing that. It is really weird to think that this is something that I get to do and talk to people like Patrick George on a weekly basis. And it's all because I got people listening. So thanks, everyone, so much for that. Have a good night. Have a good evening. Wherever you are, whatever time it is there. Thank you so much for listening. I almost forgot my own tagline. Please, be safe out there.